Hello, everyone, and welcome to another wonderful, fantastic, stupendous episode of Classic Elder Scrolls Night. I am your host, Arwen, and don't worry about the black screen you're seeing just yet. I gotta click back into the game. I am joined by the just as wonderful and fantastic. Excuse me, game issues. We've got Mike right here.
Good old Hello, Katie everyone.
Hello. And our new host, Mark.
Hi. Good to meet everyone.
And, of course, our lovely, lovely, lovely chat room joining us another week here at Classic Elder Scrolls Night. Our show is sponsored in part by Tweaked Audio, tweakedaudio.com. Quality headphones and 30% off. Use our code, off the record, all one word, at tweakedaudio.com. And by Audible. audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork is the link you need in order to get your free audiobook today. So, Mark is brand new here, and Mike, I think maybe you and I should haze him a little bit and make him read the where to find us portion of the notes. What do you think?
I think you should read it backwards if we're going to haze him.
Oh,
thanks for the prep time, guys. Okay, so just right there on the notes.
Yeah, it's right there on the notes.
Well, you can catch us on Mondays at 7 Eastern Standard Time at Twitch TV, Quest Gaming Network. Emails you can send at elderscrollsofftherecord@gmail.com. And you can find us at elderscrollsofftherecord.com or questgamingnetwork.com.
Yeah, very good. Don't forget to follow us at Elder Scrolls OTR. And, of course, on Facebook, facebook.com/elderscrollsofftherecord. And on Google, google.com/+QuestGamingNetwork. Mike, what are we doing today?
So tonight we are back in Oblivion, Elder Scrolls 4. We are going to be looking at a couple of discussion topics. The favorite gimmick in Oblivion that Skyrim didn't have. And then as we're progressing through the game, we will be discussing the history of, this time it'll be the Tamrielic histories, the Akaviri influences. Plus we have a fast question and we have an email this week.
That's right. Now, Mark, I believe what we're doing today is was partially, well, I wasn't there when you and Mike were discussing this, so I'm not sure whose idea this was, but I thought it was a great idea. And, you know, maybe one of you guys just sort of explain today exactly what we're going to be looking to do.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, okay. We are going to be looking at going to take Avarwen up to the Pale Pass, which is in the very north of Cyrodiil. It is the pass which is very near to the border of Skyrim that, based on the earlier topic that we talked about, the Akaviri influences, is very important to the history of Tamriel, and particularly the Akaviri invasion. And the influences that it's had over the years. So we can see that Avarwen is in Bruma, I believe?
That's correct, yeah.
And that's where the quest begins for everyone.
Right. Now, when you go to Bruma, you come inside the main castle here, and they tell you that, you know, Countess Nerina Carvane wants to speak with you. And she's an Akaviri relic collector. You can see them all throughout around here. You know, these guys had the idea of, you know, let's go take a look at this quest because it's really awesome. Now, Mark, I want you to talk, you know, a little bit about yourself in just a few minutes. But I want you before we get into that. I sort of want to ask you, what is it about this quest that made you say, I know, we need to be doing this week?
Well, I particularly like this quest because it deals with the Akaviri, which you don't often get much that goes into them or their history in these games. They're kind of they're a pretty mysterious group. from across the, you know, from across the sea. With this quest, it starts off with her asking you to go find a certain artifact, and she's asking you to go to a place that they've, no one actually knows where it is anymore. They've actually lost the location. So she gives you a map and she says, go here, go take the map, go to this particular spot and go start tracking it down. And from there, you basically start on a treasure hunt and eventually come to the fort. It's just a really cool little adventure.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. Now, I'm talking to her now, and I don't seem to have a map in my inventory just yet over this quest. Let me take a look here. It's called Lifting the Veil. The Countess has told me that she's seeking a particular relic of Akaviri origin, the Draconian Madstone, an amulet that supposedly grants the wearer immunity to poison. It's recently come to her attention that it may be located in the ruins at Pale Pass. She's offering a substantial reward for the talisman's return. I should speak to her for more information. I got that far with it, I suppose, but I don't necessarily have anything here that's been added. So I'm just going to talk to her. Let's get Draconian Madstone. This must be it. Here we go. Try and click. Yep. Akaviri Diary Translation added. Akaviri Fort Key added. And Pale Pass Map added. Fantastic.
There we go.
All right. See, it's how you talk to people, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, I know we've got a major talking point that we want to get into, and that is favorite gimmick in Oblivion that Skyrim didn't have. I saw this came up on the Elder Scrolls forums, and I thought it was a lot of fun maybe to talk about this. But first, we've got a new host. So welcome, Mark. Glad you're here. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself and how you got into Elder Scrolls, and let's start with that.
Okay. Well, I've been playing the Elder Scrolls series since Daggerfall came out way back in 96. Young guy, 15. And I gave this new RPG a try. And I'd played games like the Quest for Glory series, which were, they were pretty average. Well, they were good, but they were your average fantasy games, adventure games, where you went from point A to point B. And so I load up Daggerfall, and the world just opened right up from the very beginning. It was a game where if you didn't want to do the main quest, you didn't have to ever do the main quest. If you wanted to be a thief, you could be a thief. You could be a knight in shining armor. You could spend the entire game doing nothing but be a merchant, going from town to town, riding a cart. I mean, it just opened up in a way that you'd never really seen before. And this openness, it was just something that I really wanted to see more of in games. And so, as a result, as the series started coming out more and more, I played the games as they came out. So, the only ones I haven't played are Battlespire and the mobile games. But other than that, I've just been with the series, ever since. I just can't let it go.
Yeah, there is definitely something about this series that sort of grabs a hold of you. And if it clicks with you in the right way, it doesn't let go. And Mike, I'm sure you would agree to that.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't let go, even to the point where we're retrogradely playing many of these games, myself, yourself, where we did not play them originally when they came out, but are going back and playing them and loving and spending just tons of time in them.
Oh, yeah. And the best part is that there's so much in each game. You can play them over and over again I've been playing Daggerfall since 96 and all the games as they came out. And every time I go back, I still find new stuff to do. Recently I was playing Skyrim again, and went over to do something in Markarth. And first time going in, for the when you go in, there's an attempted, or there's an assassination that happens right in front of you.
Right.
First time I decided, oh, well, maybe I can try and stop that. And I did, and it actually changed some of how the quests went on from there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, this was after, I don't know how many playthroughs, but, you know, every time you play, you can find something new that you've never seen before. Just everything is so wide open.
Yeah, especially if you do a little outside-of-the-box thinking.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, speaking of outside-the-box thinking, this quest is I'm already enjoying it. I like it when they give you something that you really got to read through and you know, take a look at. It's not the first time in Oblivion I was handed a map that's separate from the main map. Certainly, the Knights of the Nine quest, it gives you a map with all different marked locations you have to visit. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but, you know, that was a lot of fun. You use it as an item. However, it's not exactly the most conducive to a live stream, so...
just having to flip back and forth to the map.
Right. I gotta ask, maybe you gentlemen know, Dragon Claw Rock, is that where I should be heading here for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you're gonna be way up there.
Yeah, well, you've already got it there on your map, so you've been there once, so you can save the walk. And the map you follow, it's not a long one. There's like two markers you've gotta go to.
Right. Well, save the walk is not what we do around here, that's for sure. So
okay,
half the fun is getting there, and on this show, that is absolutely true.
So long as you don't get jumped by minotaurs.
Yeah, that was last time.
Yeah. I was doing show prep too. You remember that? We were talking yesterday. I'm like, hold on, guys, I'm getting jumped by minotaurs.
Yeah.
All right, now, Mark.
I'm growing everything.
It just all comes crashing down.
Good now, thing Skyrim's not a multiplayer game. Oh my god, I could see it now. Varwin running across the map, you know, and the rest of us being there, and dragons just following him, and he's dropping the dragons on us. Take care of these guys. I got something to do.
I'll be right back, guys. Mark, tell us, you've got this wonderful story about Daggerfall.
Oh, yeah. Well, Daggerfall, of course, was... you had the Mages Guild and the Fighters Guild, Thieves Guild, and the Dark Brotherhood, along with other guilds like Knight Guilds and the Temples. I joined the Dark Brotherhood, and I was doing fairly well in their ranks. I was pretty high up. I think I was like a level or two from being near the top, or something like that. It's been a while. And I had also joined the Mages Guild. I had finished a job for the Dark Brotherhood, and I had to go back and drop it off. But Daggerfall actually gives you time limits for the different missions that you have to do. And I had finished this mission for them well within the time frame. As I was going by, I stopped. Oh, well, across this, across the street is actually the Mages Guild. Well, there's a repeatable mission you can do for them where you protect one of their members from Dark Brotherhood assassins.
Right.
And at the
from end yourself.
Yeah, basically. Well, it's not me. It's other... Hey, look, it's the other guys that are trying to do work. If they can't get past me, that's not my fault. You know, it's just... I'm helping the organization, getting rid of the people who can't do the job.
That's a good way to rationalize it.
Oh, exactly. And, of course, when I was playing it, the game, it didn't even strike me that this might matter, that I was interfering. All I was thinking was, well, it's a video game. It's not going, you know, they're completely separate entities from each other. They're not going to intertwine. And frankly, at the end of every time you do this quest, you get a magic item. So that's lots of reputation. That's lots of money. Perfect. You know, what could go wrong? So I go, I spend my time, I do this quest over and over for a couple of days, if not a week or two. If not, yeah, probably about a week or so. And so finish all up. You know, I'm laden down with items. Go over to drop my quest off at the Dark Brotherhood. And the quest giver doesn't even take the quest back. He just says, okay, you know what? We're sick of you. We're sick of you and your crap. You're out. And by the way, we're sending a couple of our brothers out to have a word with you.
Uh-oh.
About your behavior lately. And
time
it was
to
the
out more.
Exactly. It was the first time that I'd ever had a game really sort of hold you to your actions. It was a case of the game paid attention to what you were doing. And if one thing helped your reputation with this group, the enemies of that group, it hurts your reputation with them. So by helping the mages, the Dark Brotherhood got pissed, and eventually I got to the point where they'd had enough.
And that's something I'm really hoping they bring into the next Elder Scrolls game, where you have opposing factions that really cannot coincide together, because it increases your amount of replayability. That mm-hmm. you know, this time, you know, like when in Skyrim, you kill off the Dark Brotherhood, or you choose to join the Dark Brotherhood. Now, but throughout it, you're involved with the Pentis Oculus, so it'd been cool to have that option to join the Pentis Oculus or to join the Dark Brotherhood, and then
and
each time that, it changes.
Yeah, and really, that choice is pretty much the closest you've to destroy the Dark Brotherhood or leave them be or join them. That's pretty much the closest choice you've had involving where you're forced to either decide to join a guild or somehow fight against them. And that, because otherwise, except for in Daggerfall, there hasn't been a whole lot of interconnectivity between the guilds ever since. They sort of go to their own separate corners. And
yes.
Yeah, in Daggerfall, it meant that you had to pick and choose. You couldn't really... in Skyrim, I was able to join every single guild and become, boss of every single guild, as it were. With Daggerfall, you couldn't do that. Or if you did, it took a long amount of time, and you had to be very careful as to what you were picking and choosing for your missions.
Hmm. I guess just one more thing before we move on. And that is this. Every Elder Scrolls game that's come out since Daggerfall, you've basically have played it when it was, first out, right?
Yeah.
that to me is just is amazing. You've got all this all of this experience actually playing the games when they were relevant, and it's you can't just snub your nose at that kind of thing, because you're playing the game for years, and then the next one comes out. You sort of become, like an expert at it. So,
well, as much as you can with these games, each one of them is just they're quite different from each other in a lot of ways. I mean, there's more tying them together than that separates them. But they've had a very interesting evolution over the years.
Right.
Just with things that they've changed in the lore, mechanisms that they've changed. That type of thing.
And you've been there the whole way through, the whole step of the way, watching that change happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome to me. All right, well, let's move on to our discussion of the week, and that is your favorite gimmick in Oblivion that Skyrim didn't have. Obviously this comes from the Elder Scrolls.
Oh God, you're lockpicking.
Oh yeah, I know. This comes from the Elder Scrolls forums. Mike, would you mind introducing the segment and what the author has to say?
Yep, not a problem. So the discussion topic: favorite gimmick in Oblivion that Skyrim didn't have. By anyone want pie? Yes, please.
I do.
Title says it all. I really enjoy the spell making. I've spent all my money on making as many spells as my wealth could give me. And I don't regret it. I really wish they kept it in Skyrim. So what's your favorite Oblivion mechanic? So there's some examples here. So what's our favorite feature or gimmick about Oblivion we missed in Skyrim? There could be answers such as attributes, acrobatics, the arena, short swords and its related skills, longer quest lines, and larger spell selection. And this comes from the forums at bethsoft.com.
Right. And those are some of the things the community had said was their favorite parts favorite things in Oblivion that sort of Skyrim missed out on. Real quick, I want to go back here. Now you guys see where I'm sort of roaming around here.
Yep.
I mean, am I close at all on this?
Go back to the rock, and you sort of need to go west from there, up the hill. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So, Mike.
Yes. I would say. I was interested in two of the choices that the community had talked about. One being the arena. I really did enjoy that line of questing there, having you'd enter into the arena and you would face challengers of increasing difficulty to the point where you became the champion. And I thought that was kind of a cool spectator sport, but also a cool participatory sport inside the game. So more things like that nature where it gives you diversionary stuff to do that is active. And the second one was the short swords and related skills. Now, there is no related skill in Oblivion. You either have blades or blunt, and the blades include everything from daggers to claymores, and the blunt is axes, maces, hammers, things of that nature.
Yeah, for those on the stream and... on YouTube, you could see it right here, blade, and then blunt as well. But there is actually no short sword, anything like that in Oblivion.
Yeah, when Skyrim, you do have that capability on the star patterns there on the constellations to pick some specialties so that you can gain more damage using a sword versus an axe or something of that nature. And they split it as one-handed versus two-handed, which ESO has kept up with that kind of thing. Oh, no, another Minotaur. You can't get rid of them.
Now, this place seems to be just filled with them. I'm wondering if maybe you guys got together and you're like, let's just throw Minotaurs at this guy and watch him sweat.
Yeah.
But when you look more importantly at the selection of items when it comes to Oblivion... You can find short swords, long swords, each of the different makes. You can find claymores. You can find katanas, and you can find cutlasses in the swords category, along with daggers and stilettos. So it gives much more diversity to the weapon population. And I really, missed that in Skyrim, that you would have the two-handed sword version of the ebony sword, and you'd have... the one-handed version of the ebony sword, and you'd have the ebony dagger. Yeah. They all kind of look the same. When you start looking at some of these ones in Oblivion, they are very different in make, and some of them are derived from classical weapon types that we see in real life in museums.
Yeah, I remember that being a big thing when Skyrim had first come out. People were saying that they had missed the diversity of weapons that you find in the other games. And that was one thing that sort of mobilized the modding community, was making, some diverse, I guess, weapon skins.
And I actually went so far as to download, before all of my Skyrim problems, a mod that allowed you to make any weapon equivalent to any range of level. So, like, if you enjoyed the skin that a steel sword gave you, you could have it be as powerful as a dragonbone sword.
Oh.
Because, I really enjoy, some of the more classic-looking weapons and armor. And, to have that ability to say, hey, my character is playing a barbarian type of character, wants to be in skins, but I really want to have the effect of having, heavier armor. Why shouldn't it be that, my type of armor can't be upgraded to that point?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mark? What's some things that were in Oblivion? When you were playing Oblivion, you remember fondly, and then you get back into Skyrim and you're like, you know what? Really miss that.
Well, I'd say that it was probably the character creation system. In Skyrim, you start off, you pick your race, and that's it. from there on, it's what you do dictates how your character grows. And I like that about the Elder Scrolls to begin with. But I kind of miss the ability to sort of select your skills, which ones go up faster, to set out your attributes. So if I wanted to play a really speedy, sneaky thief who might not exactly be the strongest guy out there, then I could adjust it that, okay, well, then I'm putting a little extra into my speed and maybe a little into my agility. But, you know, in Skyrim, you've got the three attributes of health, stamina, and magicka, and that's it. Increasing your stamina seems to speed you up a bit, but it also increases your strength. So it gave you a bit more customizability with your character than you do in Skyrim, at least at the front end. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the perk system in Skyrim. It's just...
it seemed a little two-dimensional.
Yeah, it takes a little longer to get the character you've got in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I know what they were going with in regards to the build of that game. And that's just streamlining the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big controversy out there, especially at the time when the game first came out, was, you know, oh, they're just making this game more accessible to casual console players. And there's a couple of popular YouTube videos out there that sort of argue for this and against this. Honestly, I think they were maybe that was partially motivated by that, but I really think a good portion of that motivation was simply, how can we make this game more modern, exist in the modern era? And I appreciate that, because Skyrim was a huge success. You know, it reached a lot of people, and oh my god, I got a huge ogre coming at me. but at the So I do appreciate that, but at the same time, I feel like Skyrim was sort of just it just lost a lot of just that classic Elder Scrolls personality that you get in Oblivion. You see it in Morrowind, you see it in Daggerfall. The building blocks of it are there in Arena, but I think that sort of Oblivion perfected.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think Oblivion really forced you to make a decision as to how you wanted to play the game that time for that playthrough, versus Skyrim really was, you could do anything and everything and play all the way through and be done with it. Versus Oblivion, if you wanted to play more of a mage class, well, you had to pick more of your attributes that were your major attributes in the mage disciplines. If you wanted to be a fighter, you had to pick more. Otherwise, you wouldn't level up.
Right. Yeah, you really had to watch that. Now, you know, one of the things that I am glad that the series retained was the feeling of, if you do decide to become a mage versus, you know, a warrior type or a thief type, the game feels completely different. And I feel like Skyrim maintained that. So that was at least a great thing.
Yes, there definitely was that feeling.
Oh, no question. And them I agree they streamlined it. I mean, whether or not it was dumbed down, as you often see some people argue, I don't really feel it's the same thing. You know, how to explain this?
No, I hear you. Yeah, streamlining versus dumbing down. Yeah, no. I get it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they were trying a new system to sort of simplify some things, sure, but to make it smoother. And there's a huge difference between that and then dumbing it down to get casuals in, as, you know, again, some people will say. One thing I'd like to see is, in the future game, that they bring back the attributes in that, but keep the perk system that they had in Skyrim. Because
The diversification with the perk system versus the novice, journeyman, master in Oblivion and Morrowind, that ability to go through and say, hey, you know what, I want to specialize in a longsword or a dagger or an axe versus just blades, and you became a, you know, a journeyman of a blade. You know, how did you want to be a sneak character? How did you want to be an archery character? You know, in your conjuring, did you want to be more necromancy versus Dremora type of conjuring with the flame and frost Atronach versus raising the dead? You know, that's one thing Skyrim did really well, is letting you say, okay, you know, this is where I want to specialize, but this is how I want to specialize in that specialty.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, what about you, Mark? What lost? What from Oblivion into Skyrim? What didn't translate for you?
Well, again, I do miss the attributes in that. I would also say that I liked the way that they did the spell casting a lot more in Skyrim than I did in any of the previous games.
Yes, I agree with that. Having one spell in each hand, I think, was a fantastic addition to the series.
Yeah, and it made being a mage more a bigger choice, because right now, if you wanted to, you could be running around, well, frankly, you are, sword and shield, and you've got a spell that you can cast at will. Whereas in Skyrim, you had your choice. You can have the sword and shield, or you can have your spell and shield, or you can have a much more powerful spell, or two spells. You had a bit more flexibility, as it were, in how you wanted to approach something. But at the same time, spell crafting didn't become this just minor thing you also have on your bar that you have to stop just if you want something other than the one spell you've got slotted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
It's kind of funny, because I agree that it does give more of an immersive feel having the spells in your hands, but it drives me nuts that, you know, if I'm doing a sword and board character or a dual wield character, that I have to stop and change out the spell for one of the items in my hand, especially with like a healing spell. And it's just like, oh, I might as well just pop a potion at that point in time.
No, that is true.
Yeah, you got a point, I suppose. Yeah. I never really minded it in Skyrim, because, you know, you've got the hot list. So, you know, you get the favorites list.
Yes.
So
my favorite list was a mile long.
Right now, right? Yeah, that's how an MMO mouse always comes in handy. You know, you got one of those the mouses that has the buttons on the side, and you just click on one of those. Oh, it's great.
I'm hoping that the next series comes out that they use the PlayStation 4's pad for, instead of the Xbox pad or game controller.
Mm-hmm.
Because the PlayStation's has that little touchscreen finger pad on the top, so it'll allow you to access some menus much easier. So, you know, because I play all of these games, you know, with a gamepad, you know, 360 that I, you know, have, you know, support inside of Skyrim or an emulator that I run for Morrowind and Oblivion and even ESO.
Hmm. You run it with a gamepad.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I've played Oblivion and Skyrim at first using an Xbox, but there's something about the mouse and keyboard that I just prefer for these games. But now this is probably because I started on Daggerfall. But
well, no, I would take that a step further, and I would say I started playing Elder Scrolls games on the console. I mean, if you go all the way back to my very first experience with an Elder Scrolls game ever, it was Morrowind, when that was contemporary. I played that on the Xbox One. And then when Oblivion came out, I had that on the 360, and Skyrim I picked up on the 360 as well. It wasn't until I got a text message from a friend at the time. It was a picture that was sent to me saying, you know, this game is beautiful. And I'm looking at the picture on my phone, and I'm looking at the screen, and I'm like, Skyrim could look like that. That's when I made the transition to PC. And so
the guy who got me involved with Skyrim came over one day a couple months ago, and I was running the laptop into my plasma TV, and I was running a mod that like reduced the light quality in the dungeons, so you had to use torches and stuff. And
he's like, "What game are you playing?" I remember that mod.
And yeah, and he's like, "Well, what game are you playing?" I'm playing Skyrim. He's like, "No." Like, yeah, and I was out walking around and got jumped by a werewolf, and I almost, left something in my pants. I was so scared when it happened, and he jumped off the couch. There was, like, screaming and running around the room because it was so scary all of a sudden, because that mod alone changed how the entire game looked and felt.
Oh, yeah. And that's what's awesome about the mods. And, you know, I had my start on the PC, and just like Mark was saying, you know, the mouse and keyboard experience, plus what you're saying again with the mods, I honestly can't play these games on a console anymore because, I mean, you know, for lack of a better phrase, my eyes have been opened to a better way of experiencing this.
Yeah, it plays so much differently. You know, but I still love having the gamepad. I mean, I started on PlayStation with PlayStation 3 with Skyrim, and a lot of my other games that I enjoyed were all PlayStation derived type of games. So
yeah,
I'm so used to having that in my hands that the mouse and keyboard sometimes feels a little wonky for me.
So many people are saying that one thing they miss about the Elder Scrolls series is being able to toggle the attributes. Did I just walk around this entire thing? And
I think you did.
did I completely miss something?
Oh no! This is right.
This is okay. No,
this,
I thought I went in circles.
The pale pass. This is
yes. You're leaving the serpent's
trail.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank God for that. That was a harrowing experience in there between the bears and the ogres, and then getting pinned up against the wall with a bear and an ogre beating me in the face at the same time. I really didn't think I was going to make it out of there. So many people are saying, I miss the attributes. And then you've got a lot of other people saying, it's old. That's old RPG stuff. Come on. Elder Scrolls fans want the attributes back. We want to be able to open up our character menu and say, I want to put 5 points here. I want to put 3 points there. 1 point here. And then I want to say, you know what? I want to reroll because all this looks like crap. That's what we want. We want that back.
And if you play Oblivion like I play, whatever's going to give me the most points at the time of my level up, those are the ones that I use.
So that's one thing that I would like to see return to the series is definitely that. And then here's what I'm glad is still in the series, and that is this, and it's up on the live stream now. How long would you like to wait? 1 hour, 10 hours? And then waiting heals you. Now, this was done. I'm looking at Daggerfall in Arena. Right?
Oh, Daggerfall. What, you don't like sleeping for 5 days just to heal a little bit?
No, I don't. I like the fact that this is still in the game. What I miss is the fact that you needed this to heal yourself. Mm-hmm. That healing potions became so readily available in Skyrim. And when you go back to a game like Daggerfall, finding a heal potion was like hitting gold.
Yeah.
And you healed yourself by waiting an hour. And you healed yourself. And then your game time meant something.
Now, one thing I would like to say with the heal, with the waiting and the sleeping, some other games do this really well, where if you have to look at your surroundings. Like right now, you're out in the Pale Pass. It's an active world area with monsters that you haven't cleared out. In other games, if you decided to wait for 2 hours in this area, there was the possibility of coming across another encounter.
Yes.
That would break your wait time.
Yes.
And I really miss that if you decide to sleep on a bedroll in, you know, a crypt, that, you know, Skyrim will let you do that without waking you up being attacked by Draugrs.
Right.
And I'm waiting for the Minotaur to jump you now.
I know, me too. I miss that.
I wouldn't worry too much about the Minotaurs.
It's a Varwin. It's Oblivion. There has to be a Minotaur.
There's some
They're
strange
like the Dark
sense
Brotherhood. They hide behind the rocks for him.
It's an occasion they all make it out for, apparently.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick, Mark, I know you wanted to sort of give your final thoughts on this. Go right on ahead, and then we're gonna move into our history section.
Well, basically, yeah. My favorite thing about the game, one thing I'd really like to see come back, is the attributes. If only because they've had such a, they give you such control over how your character comes out for you. I'd actually almost like to see them come out like they originally had been in Daggerfall, where you actually got to roll your stats.
Yeah.
At the very beginning.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That would be, you know, something to see like that. I mean, but it'd be nice to see them sort of also bring back some of the more varied skills. Maybe even some of the more movement-based skills like they had in even older games. Like, you could climb in Daggerfall. That would be a really cool thing to be able to do in, say, Oblivion or Skyrim. Like, you want to go up, you want to enter a castle, so you just scale the wall.
Yeah,
that's something definitely missing in all of this, the later franchises, mm-hmm. the vertical aspect of, you know, you see a tree, you can't climb a tree. You see a wall, you can't climb a wall. You see a rock that's in your way, you have to go around it.
Right.
Or parkour for the next 2 hours to get over it.
But the thing is it was so buggy in Daggerfall.
No question.
I mean,
well, it was Daggerfall. Daggerfall was so buggy, it's not funny.
I'm sort of noticing that. Like, there's times when I'm trying to play the game, and it's like, you know, you get sound bugs that pop up. And I mean, I was playing it. There's an currently unreleased video of Lunchtime in Tamriel right now. We're going to debut this week where I played Daggerfall. It was twice in that particular stream. I was going crazy because of audio bugs. I mean, it happened twice, and it was really like super annoying to listen to. It was just like the most annoying sound in the world.
The do 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 sort of,
yeah, something like that.
High pitched, yeah.
Yeah.
I have to be thankful for that a little bit though, because having to fight through Daggerfall, like through all those bugs, and still be able to really enjoy it, it meant that no matter what happened in the next, you know, in any game ever since, I'm okay. I can live with the bugs. There's nothing as bad as the bugs in Daggerfall.
Great. Maybe.
You'll learn, Arvaren. You'll learn.
Yeah. Apparently, I'll be doing this live too.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, great discussion, of course. But we should be moving on, and that is the history of Tamriel History's Akaviri influences. So that brings us to exactly, you know, why I'm here and fighting ogres, despite my best judgment.
Yeah, I must say, you know, you must have some really good athletic skills too, jumping up on those rocks.
They're quite impressive, actually. Let me see. Yeah. Acrobatics is at level 48.
Nice.
Yeah. By the time you're out of here, level 75.
Yeah, exactly. Just trying to get away from these things. So without any further ado, Mike, please, let's talk a little bit about the Akaviri influences.
So when Varwin gets out of this dungeon, tomorrow's paper from the Black Horse Courier will read, Special Edition, Pale Pass Discovered. Fort Pale Pass Discovered. The First Era Secrets Revealed. Fort Pale Pass, the fabled headquarters of Tamriel's First Era Akaviri invaders, had been located by an agent of the Countess of Bruma. The fortress was thought to be long lost to the ages, buried in the frozen wastes of the Jarrow Mountains, thanks to an expedition funded by her ladyship, Nerina Caravan. Countess of Bruma, the secret entrance to this great ruin was found. Previous scholars have offered no persuasive account for why the Akaviri juggernaut, having swept aside Tamriel's defenders, should collapse suddenly and completely, crossing the Jarrow Mountains. Now evidence uncovered at the site indicates a great landslide had covered the fort, trapping the hapless Akaviri commander within, leaving the Akaviri columns leaderless and isolated in the alpine wilderness passes. Now, when you look at up Akavir in the unofficial Elder Scrolls pages or the Imperial Edition, there comes out to be just pages and pages of books written about it. Some of them seem to lend credence to some facts and collaborate each other, and some of them are just completely opposite of what the others have said. And, you know, history is written by the winners, so we have to take some of this with a grain of salt. When you look at the guide to Akavir, we find that in the first era, 2702, the entire population of the city of Wayrest is forced to take refuge in the walled, gardened estates to escape a group of Akaviri pirates. The time frame of this event suggests that these raiders may actually have been the vanguard of the coming invasion. During the next months, the Akaviri invaders swept through Tamriel. They remained unstoppable until Raymond I, Raymond Cyrodiil, rallied the troops of the Kolovian estates and the convinces the armies of the Nimene Valley to join his. The Akaviri are defeated at Pale Pass and Icy Mountain Pass in the Jarrell Mountains between Cyrodiil and Skyrim. And that comes from the Guide to the Akavir. So who are the Akavir? They are people from the Eastern Continent, which we have not seen during any of the games, but it is, there is quite a bit written about it. It supports men, dragons, the Tangmo monkey people, the Kaupo Tung tiger people, and it is not known if the tiger people are similar to the Khajiit or if they're a completely separate species. And the Sisai, which is spelled with a T at the beginning, which are the serpent folk. The Akaviri of the first invasion were believed to be the Sisai, but not part of the second one. And then there is one last race, the demons from Carnell, that are found there. Now, it's kind of interesting when you think about it. Through Oblivion, we see the Akavir as men, when we finally get to meet some of the ghosts here. But most of the time, they're talked about as the serpentine type of folk.
Hmm. Interesting. And this is a whole other continent that exists on Nirn that we haven't even been before. And you know, this is also a huge talking point right now as to the future of the series.
Now, I remember seeing a tweet this week from one of our followers that had referenced a U.S. Unofficial Elder Scrolls page article saying that the next game would be set in Akavir, and I think we pretty much dispelled that as you know, fairly old information that really wasn't...
I think it was an April Fool's joke.
Yeah, it was an April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
Now, Mark... based on this, all right, Mike did a wonderful job presenting some of this information. Mark, where can you, how can you, you know, I guess sort of add more to the discussion here as to the Akavir and their influences?
Well, the Akavir themselves, we don't know a whole lot about them because they are from another continent. One of the books actually comments that and it actually brings up an interesting point. It says that the men from Akavir at some point are eventually just completely devoured by the serpent folk. But it says that if it wasn't for that, they would have come to Tamriel. And it said something about how all the races on Nirn seem to be drawn to Tamriel. You had the Nords coming down from Atmora, had the Yokudans coming over, or, you know, the Red Guards coming over from Yakuta. You had the Aldmeri coming down, coming up from the south as well. So everything seems to always come to Tamriel. After this invasion here, though, this is actually where a lot of Akaviri influence does start occurring in Tamriel. In the late Third Era, in frankly all the games except for Oblivion, you can see their weapons everywhere. Daikatanas, shuriken, atantos, katana, those are all Akaviri in nature.
Oh, really? I didn't actually know that.
Well, this is why the blades actually have a very distinctive style for their swords and their armor. you'll notice that their swords are katanas.
Yeah.
And it, I believe that this is further in the notes, but the blades themselves were originally all Akaviri. They who swore themselves to Rimmon. In fact, it's the events that happened right here in Pale Pass, the collapse of their army's leadership, that eventually lead them to swearing themselves and forming the Blades.
Yeah, so and, the book, The Rise and Fall of the Blades, covers that entire episode.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually why in the second era, in ESO, if you look at... that's for the fighters.
Yeah, Mike, why don't you continue on, Mike?
So we'll continue on an excerpt from The Rise and Fall of the Blades. Rimmon the First, Rimmon Cyrodiil, is one of the first documented widely accepted of the mythic Dragonborn, those anointed by Akatosh and Alessa themselves, born with the soul of a dragon, is what his followers would say. Reports differ widely on the nature of the battle at Pale Pass, but the end results are the same, that the remaining Dragon Guard, upon hearing the voice of Rimmon Cyrodiil, knelt and swore their lives to him, their conqueror and savior. Fragments from the late first era texts refer to the warriors dropping to their knees and saying, "We are not hunting or did not intend," author's rough translation, continuing, "We have been searching for you." It really goes to show that these are the people who swore their lives to him and have become the Blades. This is where they started here at Pale Pass, where we're running through now.
Right. Okay. Mark, anything else?
No, that's pretty much it for the Blades. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mike, what about you? Is there anything else?
Not really about the Blades. I mean, Mark did a really good job describing the different weapons and armor. Now, one of the things that we must keep in mind when it comes to the Akavir is that this was an invasion. And we can see with any of the texts talking about invasions of the Akavir or to Akaviri, is that it all comes down to supplies and leadership. And here at the Pale Pass, the actions of Rimmon Cyrodiil really cemented the win for the legions of Tamriel. But what's oftentimes overlooked is the actions of Vivek, which if you have played Elder Scrolls Online and have gone through the Ebonheart Pack area in Stonefalls, there's a section where there's a pilgrim who talks about how Vivek flooded the plains, killing the Akavir. And what he had done is he had pretty much broken their supply lines during this invasion, allowing the vanguard to pretty much suffer a huge defeat because their supply lines were broken behind them.
Huh.
So part of that can be found in the book Vivek.
All right. Good good story point right there, too, because, you know, you could definitely get away with a savior-type story plot where, you know, this character uses some sort of, like, you know, magical thing to just wipe the army out completely. But instead, they take it a step further, and wow, Jesus. And they have the hero do something strategic, not necessarily outwardly violent, to yes. win the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with all of the series, I think they do a very good job describing some of the key things needed. I'm going to apologize right now. A train's going by my house here, so you might pick that up.
All right.
we're very close to a railroad track here, and it just happens that figures we're recording today, and it's going to come through.
Sure, of course.
Of course. They do a really good job of that with all of these series, talking about all of the different things that have led to the different aspects of a culminating victory. From one side that's telling the story. I think they've done an amazing job. The amount of material sometimes can be very daunting to read through, just the sheer amount. And with the stuff here with the Akavir, some of that is very difficult because of the different accounts at different time periods. And, you know, as I said, to the winners go the spoils, but also the writing of the histories.
Right, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what. Right now, what's daunting is trying to find my way around this crater with all these damn ogres around here.
I mean, see, but no Minotaurs.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, thank God for that.
Yeah, I think the Akaviri got a hold of those first, you know. Now, from this original invasion from Akavir, we end up with a couple of other very important things that have happened after the first era here. Besides founding of the Blades, Potentate. Yes.
Take it one syllable at a time.
Shade became ruler of Cyrodiil after the Remen the Third and his heir were killed by the Morag Tong, which many of you probably have read 2920. It's a series of books that give a fictional description of the last year of the first era.
Seeing around.
And so we can see that the rulers, as we enter into the second era, are not of Tamriel origin, but of Akaviri descendants. And the Potentate is described, him and his son, as being members of the Serpent Folk. They talk about scales and tails and lack of armor and, you know, but nothing about being a vampire, which, you know, one of those things, once again, are they vampires because it was meant to scare children or bad historical translation or just the fact of their diet was rich in meat?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So. And then yet again, there's what makes, you know, Elder Scrolls sort of shine out above other things is, you know, they intentionally write their lore and then they go back and they write lore from either another side or a side that's trying to falsify or debunk the official stuff. And so they're very keen on putting in truth and then they cover it up with lies and misinformation and also uncertainty as well. We can just be just as really three ogres, honestly. Come on.
and just as you get there, too.
Yeah, which can be just as damaging as a lie, if not maybe
the,
more so.
The propaganda that is in the game is amazing how it gives you the truth at one aspect and then turns around and hides it with another.
Right. All right. Here I am.
And the last thing that comes out of this first era invasion, after the Potentate takes over at the beginning of the second era, the Guilds Act is formed and signed. And he signed it himself. So the Guilds Act comes pretty much from Akaviri influence also. And we get a lot of the guilds that we all know and love, the Mages Guild, the Ratcatcher's Guild, things of that nature, which some of them are very funny when you read the Guilds Act. But very interesting is the Guild of Fighters that is formed that is known as the Cyphrim, which was originally open only to Akaviri people. So they got rid of all standing armies throughout the continent that the local dukedoms and stuff of that nature weren't supposed to have their own standing armies and hopefully get rid of the feudal infighting. And the development of the Cyphrim was to allow the dukes to pay to have army or fighting men come in and handle local problems. So by the time we get to ESO, it's open to everyone and is known as the Fighters Guild that we all are used to seeing.
This is actually why, when you see the Special Fighters Guild armor in ESO, why it has this very different look from everything else, why it has a more Asian feel to it.
I've often wondered exactly what that's about, because, you know, you've got a katana. It's obviously, this is supposed to be a fantasy story, you know, why a katana? And certainly you could see the undead Akaviri soldier I was fighting as I was running away from about six or seven trolls.
And now the ogres are following you too.
God, did you see what happened? I had like six or seven of these things literally running after me. I had to run outside of the dungeon. I ran around the outside of the dungeon, ran back in. They followed me in. Thank God I found a gate inside here. I ran in here and pulled the lever and locked them out. I'm down to two ogres, so...
Once again, I'm glad Skyrim is not a multiplayer. I could see it now. Varwin would bring in all the ogres, the skeletons, everything.
My
hey,
God.
Guys, I'm looking for this.
I got a friend. his name is Alan. Two friends, two real-life friends, Alan and Mike. They back in, like, 2000 when Diablo 2 first came out, they used to call me... this is when World of Warcraft first came out. It was in 2004. They used to call me the master of aggro, because I would just aggro everything. So, all right, gentlemen. Anything else before we move on to our fast question of the week?
I think that's good for those that are really interested in this. You know, if you want to go and look at the second Akaviri invasion or the which. Is listed in a book called The Second Akaviri Invasion. Or if you want to see the disaster at Ionith, which is Tamriel's retribution during Uriel the Fifth's reign, where he decided to invade Akavir, they are some very good books, and I highly suggest that you take a look at those for some of the others.
Actually, one thing. By the Fourth Era, the Pale Passes open up for travel. And if you actually look at where you start the game, where your wagon is coming from, it seems that this is actually where the Dragonborn was likely caught trying to cross in from Cyrodiil into Skyrim at the start of the game.
Oh, look at that. All right. Yep. Very good. Okay. So, gentlemen, time for the fast question of the week. Ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Why does this game seem to like to gang up on me with all these different monsters?
Winning personality.
It's saying that you're having too easy of a time doing it, that's all.
Apparently. Seven ogres.
It's trying to get you to raise the difficulty to master level.
Three skeletons, sweet Jesus. No, fast question. Ready?
Yep.
Shoot this one out to Mark first. What is your favorite Daedric prince or divine?
Hersine.
And Mike?
I would have to say lore-wise Boethia, but I really follow Amara.
Okay, I'm going to have to go with Meridia on this. Now back to Mark. Hersine, why?
Well, again, it goes back to my first experience with Daggerfall. My favorite character ended up as a werewolf at one point, and lycanthropy was a real curse back then. Like, you would have to kill... once every couple of days, an innocent, otherwise your character would sicken and end up with 4 hit points maximum. So if you did the quest for Hersine's ring, this would prevent you from having to go and do that killing. You wouldn't transform on the nights of the full moon. But you had to actually track down certain witches to actually get that quest. You couldn't. It was actually the hardest Daedric prince to summon, so finding him was always just a fun little thing, and it's stuck with me ever since. I've always just got this favoritism towards him, as it were.
Okay. Mike, what about you? Why you said Boethia? Why is
Boethia
that?
I think is it's very interesting. I mean, in Skyrim, he presents as a she, is the first thing, and gives you, you know, goes out and tells you, you know, how do you know me by, you know, the fact that I'm the only one left, that entire storyline. And then you kill off all of the followers to take on, to become her new champion. But when you look at, like, the history of Morrowind, that, her plots really, she's looked at as a good person. Which is kind of strange when you think about, you know, some of the horrendous acts that you're expected to do in her name. So just some of the storylines I thought were really cool. And then, Mara being the fact that you get that spell resistance from the quest for Mara to, you know, give you, spread the love. Yeah.
Okay. I go with Meridia on this. What I like about Meridia is... she tends to be a lawful good sort of Daedric prince, I guess. So that automatically attracts me to that sort of character. But what really got me nuts about Meridia is the fact that she is the sworn enemy of Molag Bal, who might as well be the devil in this game, in this series.
Yeah.
And she hates undead. And that is I'm always like that. I love that about my gameplay. I love playing the kind of character who just goes after undead, you know, the crusader type, and certainly, yeah, you know, destroying undead is a huge portion of that type of gameplay. And when I found out that there's a goddess who you know, you fall in favor of for doing this sort of thing, that was it. I was just like, oh man, this is great. You know, like, I love her. She's amazing. So Meridia's my jam.
Yeah, I think
it looks like you're serving her tonight.
Really cool. Oh, yes. Yeah. Ever the ever vigilant.
But I'll tell you, as a traditional skeletons role player, I was always very sad that in Skyrim that you get Dawnbreaker and it's a sword. I always wanted it to be like a mace or a hammer.
You know, it took me years, 10 years, I would say, to sort of warm up to the idea that a crusader or a paladin's favored weapon should be a mace or a hammer. And because I've always loved swords, always. I collect them, and I'm sure you guys do as well. You know, for those of our ilk, it's a pretty common thing. But I love swords, but there is something about the hammer of justice that just drops.
Well, especially, you know, doing medieval research, as plate mail became more available, the sword really lost a lot of favor because it couldn't cleave through the plate mail. That you would get a hammer to give that concussionary effect, and oftentimes the back of the hammer would be a spiked maul aspect to it, so that you could swing once, crush the armor, swing twice, puncture the armor, you know. And, yeah, so I've always looked at it as, you know, a hammer or a mace or a spiked mace, Morningstar type of thing, you know, really was always what I wanted to see her Dawnbreaker be.
I'll tell you what, this is what drives me nuts about this sort of thing. This is the reason why I like playing the Crusader. I like playing, you know, a Paladin, a Knight. You know, they you see them always wearing armor, heavy armor. You see them going after undead. You know, Meridia blesses you if this is the sort of thing you go after. But honestly, like the strength of this character is not the armor. It's not the healing. It's not the sword or the shield or the hammer of justice. It's faith.
Yeah.
Faith is the armor. And you can carry that with you every day. You carry that, you can embody that yourself. It's not an easy thing to do, but you can take something like that. You can pull it out of the game and put it into yourself, and it's applicable to real life. And you can walk around out there and have faith be your armor, faith in whatever you believe in, faith in yourself, that sort of thing, and have truth be your weapon. And nothing to me is more powerful than maybe the depiction of what you saw right here in game. You know, refusing to give up when the odds are against you, finding a way around seven ogres, outsmarting them, you know, outsmarting the undead and in a dark and dreary place, being that champion, that one hope of light out there. This was an amazing experience that I just had right here. And this is the reason why I love doing this kind of thing in these games, is because just for a few moments, you know, you can honestly be that hero you've always wanted to be.
Yeah. And I now know why the Minotaurs are chasing you. I know exactly why. It has to do with the Doctor Who episode where the people would lose faith in what they believed in, and the Minotaur thing would come and get them in the hotel.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was a good
one. Yeah, so your holy paladinism there with faith, the Minotaur is trying to get you.
Trying to get you. All right, so there's your fast question of the week. And Mark, would you be so kind as to read our email?
Okay, no problem. Hey guys, Drakoth here again. Just wanting to know if anybody else who plays Skyrim for PC has had the same bug or annoying glitch like I have. The quest where you are ready to take the Nightingale Oath, and instead of Carlyia opening the gate, she walks away, heading back towards the entrance. I found this rather quite annoying, and found some solutions online. But I'm still bothered by this. The last time this happened, two of Carlyia were in the room. One was conducting the oath, and the other was stuck in a loop, pulling the gate chain over and over. I found this quite hilarious, as she was stuck what seems to be in an infinity loop. Keep up the great work, and keep an eye on the skies, travelers. Your loyal fan and fellow Dragon Slayer, Drakath.
All right, pretty straightforward sort of thing, and not really a whole lot that we can say, but... What I liked about this email was just the goofy kind of bugs that sort of happen in these games. And I'm sort of wondering, A, did any of you guys encounter this same thing? And really more importantly, B, what's one of your more memorable bugs in these games that you've encountered throughout the entire series? From Arena to Skyrim, if there's one that's really memorable, what is that?
So I've never encountered this one. But I did look up, you know, to see how to fix it and stuff. And you pretty much have to reset the quest with her. But the most memorable one, I actually wrote into ESO a long time ago with it. I was doing the one where you meet Innalith and you go up to stop her mother, who's going to become a Hagraven. And somehow I had managed to get it that I had both Lydia and... the vampire there,
Serana,
yeah. With me at the same time. So then you have Innalith with you also, and so now I've got these three chicks with me. We're running up the tower, and anything that would hit me would piss one of them off, and all three of them would stop fighting the enemy and start fighting each other, and it would continue that way until one of them, you know, yielded. I had to leave the room, and the other ones that survived would follow me in. And then we'd go back in and pick up the straggler that had yielded. It was the funniest thing ever. It took me hours to get all the way to the top to feed her mom.
So let me ask you, not to interrupt, I'm sorry, but I got to know this, and I'm afraid I'm going to forget. Who won? Like, most of the time, who would win?
Serana would win, because she would bring up an army of undead from everybody else that was in the room that was dead, plus all the magic. And when there wasn't, like, people for her to raise, then... Lydia would win with the heavy armor and the two-handed sword, just whoop her butt. But it was the funniest thing to watch.
She totally Zoom-answered that fight.
I had a similar experience in another dungeon where you had to escort an NPC, and then sure enough, Serana and her were there. And except for Serana, I kept killing her outright whenever this happens.
Ah, no lockpicks.
Damn it.
I would say one of the funnier bugs that I've encountered was the upside-down flying dragons in Skyrim.
Now, I had never seen that. I've heard all about it, you know, but I had gotten it patched up before I actually encountered my first dragon issue.
It was, I think it was most common right at the front gate of Riften. There's a dragon that spawns there usually. That guy usually would fly on his back. Pretty awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm. Myself, funniest, I'd say the odd time where you know, dragon shouts something down a mountain and it starts bouncing, and then just, you know, the physics just go mad with it and it starts bouncing all over across the screen. Mm-hmm. But most memorable, I'd say there's two. The first one is in Daggerfall. My playthroughs always seem to have a habit of every once in a while, the game would forget to put a quest necessary object or NPC into the dungeon. So it became impossible to finish, which always, you know, which it ended up save before you even accept the quest, and then you have one save for doing it. The other one was when Heartfire came out. I was doing for Skyrim. I was doing a second playthrough, and I was going through the Dawnguard main quest, and I got to the part where you've collected all the Elder Scrolls, and you have to go and read them to find out where the important MacGuffin is. And at that point, I suddenly, you know, I'm going to read the scrolls, and it freezes. Or not so much freezes, but the scroll goes to open, and then it goes completely, it went completely black or completely white, and eventually the character just rolled the scroll back up and nothing happened. And it turned out something in Hearthfire had corrupted it, so I had to unload Hearthfire and go back about 15 hours or so.
Oh my god.
To redo it, because, and I tried going back just a little bit, but unfortunately just it had done something where when I picked up the scroll in the Soul Cairn, it just messed that scroll right up. So that one was just a really fun one. As I said, this series is great with the bugs.
So, yeah. All right, guys. Well, that is our show. So I hope everyone enjoyed what we put together for you today. Those of you in the chat room, hang on tight, because in about 10 minutes, we've got Warcraft Off the Record is about to go live here. But before we do any of that, final thoughts, and let's start with Mike.
So, final thoughts. I've really enjoyed watching you fight the ogres and the skeletons. I think it was a really good quest line here to get through. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait for our next episode in 2 weeks.
And Mark?
Yeah, no, it was great seeing you chased from one end of this place to the other. And thanks for having me, guys. Had a great time with this. Sorry I've been a bit nervous and everything, but I'm looking forward to the next one.
Well, Mark, You did a phenomenal job. So my hat off to you, and of course to Mike as well. Both of you guys are excellent additions to the show. The information that you guys come across with is fantastic. And Mark, you didn't come across as nervous at all. So no worries.
Okay.
Thank you to everyone who listened and is watching us on YouTube. Thank you to everyone who came out and watched us live. Hang out for Warcraft Off the Record. That is going to be on in about 10 minutes or so. And as always, take care, everyone. Be safe. And may the force be with you.